So what's on your mind this wonderful November day?
Well, we're still in a lot of the same place we were last month. We're into planning for 2021. We're in the midst of, I think the one thing that we talked about last time, we're in the midst of trying to at least, you know, put together mastermind groups as best we can with our COIs. Circling back on that idea, I know we talked about it more early on and then it kind of got away from us. And then we talked about the, you know, over a couple calls, talked about the, you know, significance of using some of the technology and whatnot. So since our last call, I've been trying diligently to kind of get that back together. I would say it's the one thing I've missed probably since, you know, COVID, so to speak, is my monthly, like, call it happy hour get-togethers with, you know, what I would consider centers of influences in the community. And I've really kind of lost, I hate to say lost that, but it's not been, you know, as in, you don't see people as much, you know. So I've been in the process of trying to, you know, create a virtual group to get together once a month, whether it's virtually over lunch or at the end of the day for happy hour or whatever it may be, but still working through the specifics on that. So, and then we are also probably, I don't know what inning you'd say we are in, Melissa, but we're probably in the sixth or seventh inning of adding another partner, senior partner to our team in another office. We're kind of trying to work through, you know, the logistics of that and how that works from a, you know, disclosure standpoint, marketing letters, you know, what expectations are. We had an expectation meeting, what, a couple weeks ago, Melissa?
Yeah.
And kind of sit down and talk through everybody's, you know, expectations. And we're still kind of trying to grind through that and hopefully, you know, be adding an additional partner, call it beginning of 2021, to the team. So it's kind of exciting. He's my father-in-law, so it's not, you know, it's somebody we know. He's in our Camp Hill branch, and he's probably got a few years left. But I think what we're looking at is, you know, trying to help him, you know, make the final push into retirement at the same time us, get our arms around what clients we'd want to continue to incorporate in our book of business that fit our model, who could fit our model, natural synergies, all that good stuff. So that's kind of exciting. You know, as we're sort of looking to next year, we're having a really good year in terms of assets coming in, prospect meetings. You know, I think the one thing that this program's taught me is to be a little, what's the word, particular, I guess, in terms of new clients and who we bring on board. You know, not going into a meeting looking to just get the assets, but actually going into a meeting to look for flags and reasons why we wouldn't want to do business. And at the same time, look for flags for reasons why we would. So that's sort of been a different, you know, whether it's natural or the progression of going through this program with you, that's been a change in my mindset. And I think all of our mindsets, which I think is definitely healthy. With all that being said, you know, we have a lot going on. It's been a weird week and a half here. I imagine the next couple of weeks are still going to be pretty weird, with politics and whatnot. But the funny thing is the stock market's already moved on, which is why I like the stock market a lot more than politics. So we're just kind of getting back in. We're getting some good business on that. People that are sitting on the sidelines kind of waiting for, you know, a result. That's, you know, Melissa, before you got on, we were just talking about a client who was, you know, convinced she was going to move to New Zealand if the election went a certain way. And you know, we were just able to put a whole bunch of her money in back into play now, which, again, it would have been nice if she would have done that in March, but, With all that being said, it's things are looking pretty good. We're just trying, I think, from a, and I know I'm rambling here, but from a marketing standpoint, you know, we like to do something special for our top clients at the end of the year. And we're trying to navigate around some compliance and regulatory issues, I think, as it relates to, you know, our wholesale partners, our own marketing dollars, what we're allowed to do, how we're allowed to talk about things. So we're, you know, we have a marketing meeting, the three of us, Tom, Melissa, and I, later this afternoon to kind of continue sort of drilling through that idea. That might be something that you could,
yeah, that's my thought. I would ask Rob if you have any thought on a good year end gift for our, you know, our top clients. We did a very nice dinner last year, you know, but our hands are kind of tied with that this year. So we were kind of thinking of a virtual event, but compliance doesn't like that either. We usually send out gift towers and, you know, baskets and different things. So we were kind of looking for something maybe a little bit different, but we just can't figure out what.
Yeah, whether it's symbolic, whether it's,
yeah,
you know, you don't want to just, you know, we've sent the gift baskets with the wine during COVID. We delivered lasagnas during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We've, you know, really tried to prioritize our, you know, our top 100 clients, so to speak, or top, you know, 80 clients. But with that all being said, is there anything you've ever heard from other teams or that, you know, things they send clients that they've gotten, you know, that might be unique or interesting or that they've gotten good? You know, you want to send something that they talk to their friends about or they talk to you about as it meant something. And maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but maybe anything you've ever heard along those lines, we'd be open to listening.
You know, it's so interesting because I think a bad answer, you never want to hear, it depends, right?
yeah, no, I agree. I think, it, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
You know, if you could really take the time to make it individualistic, you know, the guy that golfs, the, you know, so on and so forth, you know, it would be better. But again, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it depends. One of the things that you can do is, you know, when I was young and didn't have much, even though I had a nice job and made good money, I just didn't spend much. So I didn't have a lot of the nicer things of life. So my boss used to send us 2 wine glasses every year. And they were, you know, they were really nice glasses. You know, today they'd be, what, $100+ of glass. So that was lovely, and we still have them, and we cherish them, and we remember them every time we drink out of them. So, you know, a decanter is nice. The gift I got recently, I referred Bill Cates to a client, and he sent me paraphernalia from Wake Forest University that, you know, I play golf with my granddaughter, not every day, but we try and hit balls every day. And she's 6, right? So he sent me, you know, a Wake Forest golf towel, Wake Forest head cover, Wake Forest balls. And most of that ended up on her golf bag, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big deal. And a nice little Wake Forest hat. And so, you know, nothing could have made me happier than opening that and being able to give that to my granddaughter. So that was, I mean, when you ask people what brings them joy, it's a really good question. And a lot of them, when you're, you know, when you're dealing with clients, your average age is 65, which your probably clients are 65. it's their grandchildren. And so doing something that is in their interest, whether they're a little soccer player, so you give them a Penn State soccer ball or a this or, a, you know, whatever. Just think about where they went to school and then the grandchild and what they like to do and maybe give gifts according to that. And you can do it pretty much all online.
Yep. Okay. No, that's good. And that's kind of along the lines of what we were sort of thinking. Just trying to figure out how to really make it individual.
Yep.
That would be research. Yeah. That's research that goes a long way, right? that isn't a one-time deal. So you find out, you may know but may not consciously remember where everybody went to school. And this sort of reminds you. And then you also find out whether they care about that, whether they even have grandchildren. So you're kind of really helping yourself to learn what makes them happy. And, this has been an interesting time because we sort of all have had to reflect on what makes us happy and, stop and think and enjoy the moment rather than complaining that we can't go to Indonesia or something.
Right.
Right?
Not exactly. Exactly.
One of the things that I'm working on is I'm working on a project to, the purpose of it isn't as important as the passion behind it. I've always had a foundation and I've always tried to give scholarships to kids that might not have gone to school otherwise. But my original intention was to get them into our business. And it's directed at minorities because my last 10 years at Merrill Lynch as a manager and district director, I was always frustrated by the lack of diversity and the size of the pool. So that when we had to hire, we hired and then they tended to fail because they were chosen from such a small pool of candidates. And so my intention one of the solutions is to develop kids, while they're in college, give them work study program, make sure they understand financial planning and then put them on a team like your team. And which would give them a guarantee, virtually a guaranteed start in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're doing now. We're really going to actually do this. But what I find is that when you're working on something that you're actually passionate about, it's not, it's like this. I do this to raise money for my foundation, right? So I'm passionate about it. Even though you'd think, well, Rob, you're teaching the same material over and over. And I'm like, no, it's always different. I have different clients. They have different issues. And, there's always a puzzle in there somewhere if you look hard enough. Like this question, right? This isn't the question I get every day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so what I find is that when you're passionate about something, kind of all your previous barriers for reaching out kind of go away and their barriers for saying no kind of go away because everybody kind of gets it. And if you're willing to do the work, they're definitely willing to be engaged. So I haven't had anybody say no so far. So it's kind of fun. And so one of the things that you want to do is reach out to your clients and, when you ask them what brings them joy, ask them, what are you passionate about? Because sometimes they really will light up and that gives them purpose and you may be able to help there too. So they're really passionate about this or that, right? Helping the homeless or helping, unwed mothers or helping this or that. And you can show an interest in that and you can give money, but more importantly, you can get involved. And you got enough of you that you can be involved in a number of things. And if you happen, you know, to be happily married with a spouse, they can be engaged in that also. So you can cover quite a nice large waterfront of activities in your community, the things that are very important to your best clients. So sometimes I want to make sure that your activities match up with your clients' interest, not to do it just for the clients, of course not, but if you can find your way clear to see the value in it, then that is a great way to connect and make your relationships deeper and better with your clients.
Right. No, we agree. I think that's one of the things with our top clients. I've really, especially with COVID, I mean, nonprofits, not to go on the nonprofit tangent, but it's been hard on them this year. You know, they usually raise their money through events and you know, or runs or golf tournaments or, you know, and, you know, we've tried, you know, I've gone specifically to some top clients and said, you know, and it kind of came to us just sort of on a whim because we had a top client that came to us with something she's passionately working on. We agreed to be a sponsor of it. I mean, it didn't take us a lot of thought. And then it got canceled and we just agreed to continue to sponsor it even though it was canceled. And then we took that idea to other clients and that we know are very active in the nonprofit world and said, you know, hey, you may not know of something right now, but if you're nonprofit or your committee or whatever you're involved in is looking to hold a virtual event or do something as a fundraiser, you know, we would be very interested in sponsoring it for you. You know, as means to try and help the nonprofits, and help the client and in some respect, learn more about what the clients are interested in. And like you said, passionate about.
And you could probably do that for pretty short money.
Yeah. Not a lot of money, a couple $100 here or there, you know, It's not a very expensive ask usually, you know, and you know, and this is going to continue into next year, you know, so we'll, you know, I think, you know, hopefully we don't get crushed, but at the same time, it'd be cool if we got crushed, you know, with that idea, you know, so.
Well, that's a really good idea. So say you're going to, I mean, theoretically, you're not allowed to give, you know, only so much money to your client in terms of a gift for Christmas, but you could probably, you know, just depending, again, mass customization, you could do this as part of your holiday, thinking is, look, you know, this has been tough on us, but it's been a lot tougher on a lot of other people. You know, are you engaged in a, and some of them are really, you know, having trouble even keeping their staff on, right? So.
Right.
If you guys can make a contribution, to that organization, that's probably more important than any gift you could give to them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I agree. And it's quite honestly, it comes out of the same bucket. You know,
right. Exactly.
And, so, you know, I agree wholeheartedly and it goes to something, you know, versus right. A stale box of crackers and a $15 bottle of wine disguised as a $60 mm-hmm. bottle of wine, you
right.
know, so yeah, no, I think that's good too. But yeah, no, so other than that, other than some marketing things as it relates to year end, you know, we had a couple calls back. We talked to you about operational issues and process, as it relates to that. I think, and, you know, Melissa could report on that probably better than I, but we've definitely seen with us instituting more of a black and white process for not to pick on Wendy, but for Wendy in operations, we've seen more consistency in that manner over the last couple of weeks. B, I think we all feel better if Wendy, you know, Wendy's out sick today. I think we feel better about where things are in process, where, you know, things are outstanding, what's going on with them. And that, you know, I think those two pieces in particular in this kind of still work remotely, you know, most of the time world have I think hopefully lessened some anxiety, amongst the group, but, you know, I think at least make us feel like we're not fearful of dropping balls.
Right. Well, that's terrorizing in your business. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a terrorizing thing. Wondering every day whether a ball's going to get dropped and you're going to lose a client because of it. So, yeah, you got to get those things fixed. That paralyzes your I used to literally go to my assistant when this would happen, and I'd take the stuff back and fix it myself.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we have been, Rob. And we had to spin the table and start getting accountability back in her seat. So we did, you know, start with structure, and our expectations for her to come to the table on different things on different days of the week. We're still not there 100%, but we have seen improvement. So I think for us over time, we might see improvement in shorter windows, and then, you know, but I'm hoping that we just have laid the groundwork for consistency, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. So time will tell. But yes, I do feel much better where we have things at this moment. But hopefully we can continue that.
Well, you know, as you simplify the business in terms of the 12-4-2, everybody thinks, well, that really makes it much more complicated. Well, in reality, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is a concierge practice. The ER emergency room stuff goes out the window. Now we're just focused on bringing in new clients and servicing our existing clients. The life should be simpler and more mm-hmm. process oriented.
And I think the key that Mike spoke about earlier is to, you know, when we do have those larger prospects, we are looking at, Mike did a really good job of saying, does that person really fit our service model? And no, they did not. So, you know, that's when he turned a large prospect away. But, you know, the red flags that he saw during the meeting and everything that he discovered, they just didn't fit into our service model that we're really trying to incorporate here, especially going through the Supernova process.
Isn't it kind of freeing or liberating, whatever term you want to use, to
it was hard because you do look, I know, Mike, we've talked about that, you know, and you know it's hard because you do look at the dollar number, but at the same time, you know, we really talked through what all red flags were there and did that person really fit our service model, and the answer was no. So, you know, Mike, you know, did a good job of saying, hey, I think the best fit for you would be here at Vanguard because of their lengthy conversation. So, but like Mike already mentioned, it was the Supernova process and has really turned our mindset with that.
Yeah, thank you. And you're right. And you'd made the right decision to do that because from now on, it's kind of like in the beginning, you take whatever you can, and then you sort of take your practice back from the clients and say, I'm sorry, this is my practice, not yours. And I love you, but this is, you know, we need a life too, right? So we need some balance. We need to run this thing efficiently. And in the end, you're going to like it better. And in truth, they do. As I say in the book, you know, if you turn it over to the clients, they are tough taskmasters. And so you can't do that. You've got to gain control. You know, when you walk into a coffee shop that the Starbucks or a place that delivers a great cup of coffee, you tell them what you want. They make it and they give it to you, it isn't, you tell them what you want as the client, but they deliver what it is that they make, right? And they don't make up something, and the client has to understand that their order is their order and not something that you can change after you've made the coffee. You can't say, no, I don't want that now. I've changed my mind, you know. So that's a bad client. You got to be a good client and listen and value the experience that you're getting. And some clients are not good clients and want to change their order at the end. And like, wait a minute, I didn't order that. I ordered this. And you're like, wait a minute, this is trouble. So, yeah, we're very proud of the fact that you guys are adopting a model that, is very client-centered. But it has to be the right client to fit into it. Not everybody is a good client. And I think Supernova sort of makes it clear. If you don't want a financial plan, if you don't want 1242, you don't want to pay a fee, then you probably belong somewhere else. So, which is great, you know, simplifies it.
Yeah. Right. We don't need more clients that you, you know, get, you know, roll your eyes when the phone rings, you know, right. Mm-hmm. You don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important.
We have
a lot of really great clients, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
In the book, I think I call them cringe clients. When the phone rings, you cringe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And I also, I think that makes, you know, we had, Melissa and I had an interaction with a client who's currently a client. He's a small client, but the family itself is a very big client, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And he would become probably a very big client at some point. Okay. And he's from a pretty well-known, well-to-do family in the York, Pennsylvania area. And the father died, passed away a couple months ago. And Melissa and I met with him, when was that, Tuesday? Last week. We both walked out. We met with him just to go over all the paperwork to get his name on for, you know, power of attorney for mom and get all the IRA. There wasn't anything to go through probate or estate account or anything. It was IRA to IRA. I mean, it should have been very simple. And we both left that meeting thinking, man, that guy's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of what my recommendations were for the money and what we do, you know, I think because of that, and again, you position, and this is how we would do it, and these would go into managed money, and we would buy bonds with managed money, and we would, you know, yada yada, versus the old school, and versus allowing him to dictate what we did. And I think we both walked away with that thought. I even said something to Melissa, and she's just like, no, Mike, it's the right thing to do. You know, take it or leave it. You know, mm-hmm. it's to your point, Rob, it's a cup of coffee. You know, that's got your name yep. on it. You're welcome to walk across the street to McDonald's if you'd like to.
Yep.
But this is the coffee we serve here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, go from there. But it does, I would say, Supernova has definitely opened our eyes in terms of how we evaluate each and every client. I think there's been some shock to certain clients as it relates to how they were treated, maybe good and bad, with our former partner, because Rob didn't look at clients necessarily. He wasn't a good listener. So he didn't fully quite always have a context of what they did for a living, who they were, if there was other money out there.
He
had his view.
Go ahead, and Melissa. He would, our A clients were not, they weren't A clients by what they paid us. They were A clients of what he thought they had outside of us. but he wouldn't ask for additional business, if that makes sense, because it's kind of weird. But, you know, so when we took over the book when he retired, we started looking at it. Okay, our A clients is who pays us. So we sorted our book top down from highest revenue down, and then started working it that way. But Mike's right. You know, we have been able to find out a lot of additional information for our clients. We really try to make everything that we do for them personal, you know, and as we're learning more. And it allowed us to win additional outside assets because we're not afraid to ask for business. And we started, you know, prospecting Rob's book the same way we prospect any prospects. It's a financial plan. And you know, I know we reviewed our money in motion last call, but, you know, we really do have a healthy pipeline and continue to have that, I think, with our financial planning approach.
That's great. So we kind of went around today a little bit. Would you like to go back to the five-star model and report in and have me be more of an accountability coach? Or do you you want to work on case study work or just overall team dynamics or any particular direction you want me to go?
I think Mike, I don't know what your thoughts are, but you have heard us talk. We went through the five-star model the last time when everybody was on with us. Where do you think that we could do better?
Well, one of the things that, you know, I listened to a guy this week, and two things came out of it. One was the same thing that Larry Wilson talks about, Jim Lehrer talks about, and that is, number one, face the truth. Okay? We all lie to ourselves, which is fine. You know, that cupcake really isn't that bad for me. It doesn't really have 600 calories. I'm going to be fine. I've been good. And we lie, right? Because we know it's bad for us, and we know we shouldn't eat it, but we eat it anyway. So the idea is face the truth. What are we doing well and what aren't we doing well? And that's really important to get a good solid baseline in reality. The second thing is don't try and do it alone. So when you're trying to make a change, you faced reality. You've determined that this is something we should do. It's in our best interest. We can do it. We're capable of doing it. And therefore, we're going to do it. The final thing is, how are we going to hold ourselves accountable to it? That's the place where everything breaks down. Because every story you tell me or any team tells me always starts out with, you know, this has been a tough whatever. This has been a special month, so we didn't move forward with this. So there's always an excuse. And the excuse, you know, is an excuse. And it means that what you decided was that acquisition strategy of one sort or another wasn't as important as you thought, as you said it was. Okay, it just wasn't, because there was no, that's the interesting thing about acquisition. There generally is no immediate penalty for not executing on it. If you don't do 12-4-2, may not be that month that you pay for it, but you're going to pay for it within, say, 3 months. You're going to lose clients. They're going to call and say, what the heck happened to 12-4-2? So you do it no matter what. Nobody ever comes back to me and says, well, we had a pandemic, and so we didn't do 12-4-2. They all say, we did 12-4-2, but we stopped prospecting. And that's the key. So why? Because you know the penalty for not doing 12-4-2 is loss of clients, which is loss of revenues, which is loss of you know, in the end, theoretically, if you awfulize it, loss of job. So you're going to do it no matter what. So that's the way you must. You can't treat all of acquisition that way, but you've got to take a piece of that and say, this is sacred. This is what we're going to do no matter what, pandemic or World War II, III, IV, you know, cyber attack, whatever it is, we're going to do this, X. And then you have a, and then you hold somebody, you get somebody to hold you accountable for that. And usually the reason we do 12-4-2 is because of our partners and because of our sales assistants, our administrative assistants, because they go to the trouble of setting the appointments. So we're going to actually make those, we're going to make those appointments. We're going to talk to the client. And that's the way you've got to set up your acquisition, with that kind of integrity. So you can make bilateral contracts with your partners. You can have Wendy hold you accountable. But what you do, and this is what I've, this is what I've found. This is universal. This isn't you guys. This is everybody. If you can make a sacred appointment, a 12-4-2 with that initiative, then you will follow through with it. What, if it's a meeting with a center of influence, it's an appointment, it's scheduled, you have a folder. If it's a meeting with a, you know, with a center of influence inside a niche, or if it's simply you meeting with a teammate to talk about niche marketing, those are the things that are then sacred appointments, and you do them. So, you know, you spend, sit and talk. If, we took 2 minutes to remember our veterans at 11 o'clock, 11-11-11. I was with a Canadian, and they are very ritualized about that experience, by the way. They, because it really started in Britain after World War One. 11-11-11 mm-hmm. was when the armistice was signed. So at 11 o'clock, he asked me if I wanted to take a moment. And I said, yes. Well, let me tell you something. 2 minutes is a really long time when you don't do anything. And you just sit there and remember fallen soldiers and relatives and things like that. It's a wonderful thing to do. My point is if you set aside 45 minutes to work on niche marketing and didn't do anything else but that, that's a long time. And you can do a lot in that time.
No, I agree. It's what we, you know, we do a marketing meeting every week that's an hour. And, we, you know, there's different phases of it, you know, in terms of what we do, but we get a lot accomplished in that hour, every week. It doesn't matter, you know, if we got, you know, it's supposed to be at 1:30 every week. So, you know, if the week, the Wednesday, it's Wednesday. So the Wednesday that we have this, you know, we move it, but it always happens on Wednesday. And I think it's crucial, to making sure we don't lose sight of things, that we're holding each other accountable for things that we talked about the week previous that we were to accomplish, you know, so on and so forth. And then it, you know, it also keeps that from getting lost in other conversation.
Right.
You know,
So I guess
I think the accountability piece is huge, and that's kind of where we were, you know, as we were talking through operations, you know, it was always easier for us to just fix it and, you know, continue on and move on, even though I was getting frustrated, you know, and that's many conversations that myself, Tom, and Mike have had, you know, as, okay, we need accountability. So, you know, whether it's accountability within each other and us holding it, but definitely getting it back to our sales assistant. So, you know, I think taking away from what you said, Rob, is there's always an excuse, and there is. So I think as we are continuing to move forward, especially into 2021, we're hopefully taking away our excuses. And I think, Mike, you would agree, because we have had – you know, many conversations around this recently, and the accountability piece. So I think we're heading in the right direction with that.
I think if you can become superstars of accountability, you're going to be happier human beings. I mean, there's always going to be change. And when mm-hmm. change happens, the average human being goes to the nest. Right? That's why your clients call when COVID came and said, sell me out. I'm going to my nest. Right? I'm going to go find a safe place and hunker down. Yet the entrepreneur, you guys, sees opportunity in change. And instead of going to the nest, you go out into the battle. And you see the opportunity and you take advantage of it, thus coming out the other side of the pandemic, better, stronger, smarter, wiser, and wealthier. And that's the key. Because there's always going to be a pandemic. There's always going to be something. You know, I can't make a decision till after Christmas. I can't make a decision till after Thanksgiving. I can't. You hear them all the time from clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And it's just excuses for not dealing with things that they should be dealing with. And same with you guys. You know, I can't do this till we get this. Well, you know what? You can. You just prioritize and you hold people accountable. You delegate and then hold them accountable. You cannot do it yourself. You have to have others. And that's accountability and it's leverage. So leverage is one of the key elements of success. Anybody that's ever become multi-wealthy, multi-millionaire wealthy, has always done it because they've leveraged their brain. Not because they did it with piecework themselves. Impossible to do. So that's the idea. That's the idea. Make sense?
Yep.
It does.
Sounds good.
So you have your weekly meeting. I want you to have your weekly meeting, but I want you to have your daily meetings with yourself. Okay? And if you need Wendy to hold you accountable or you two guys hold each other accountable. Did you do it today? Did you have your center of influence meeting today? But schedule them, put them on the calendar, make the call. If it's an appointment, it's even better. I'm working, you know, my project I'm working on right now with my, I'm creating, you know, like four mastermind groups to solve a puzzle of how to get more kids into our business that are among the diverse population. And each one of those mastermind groups will have a weekly meeting. And we will hold ourselves accountable till we get the project done. And people are like, wow, that's a lot of work. No, it's not a lot of work. It's just, you just do it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Agreed.
Yep.
All right.
So have
sir.
Fun. Some good ideas. You guys have got, I'm serious. You have huge, huge potential. I mean, you're a great team. You're young. You're energetic. You're smart. You're a great team. You can do amazing things. Maintain your minimums. Maintain your standards. And keep prospecting. You'll get many, many breakthroughs. You know, you always hear it. The harder you work, the luckier you get. You know, I've been very lucky in my life. Well, you know, it comes when you work. You plant lots and lots of seeds, plant lots of fields, and you'll get many, many rewards. So have fun. Look forward to next
thank you.
Month.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
Likely. See ya.